In 2007, TV network CBS dropped 40 kids in the middle of the New Mexico desert as part of a brand new reality show. These kids would have to build their own society from scratch. And if this sounds like Lord of the Flies to you, well, it was meant to.
We were on this mission together. We were going to prove to the world that we could make a better society than adults could.
I'm Josh Gwynn, and I want to know what this wild TV experiment was really about. Split Screen, Kid Nation, a 6-part podcast from CBC. Available now.
It's been a rough week for Facebook.
The largest one-day loss in market history.
Facebook stocks plummeting an astounding 19%. The company losing a historic $119 billion.
Facebook says it has removed 32 accounts from Facebook and Instagram.
32 fake accounts, part of a covert campaign likely designed to influence the midterm elections in November.
Obviously, this isn't the first time the company's been in trouble. This feels a little different, though. Despite major user privacy concerns and allegations of undermining democracies and, of course, the general competition for eyeballs on younger, fresher social media platforms, people are sticking with the tech giant for now. But there might be a tipping point here. Can users eventually get so fed up that they do abandon Facebook? How could that happen? What will Facebook look like 10 years from now? I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings. This is The Big Story.
Imagine a huge concert festival where when the show's over, everyone just goes home. That's how I think frail Facebook is that none of us has a contract with them.
Jesse Hirsch is a futurist and a data scientist who covers technology and social media. How bad has this last week been for Facebook? Because it feels really bad.
I think it doesn't. It's not as bad as it looks. And I think if anything, Facebook has gotten away with a number of scandals and a number of public relations debacles. And this was kind of a payday in the sense that I think the investors had taken a very rosy picture of how Facebook was handling it. And it turns out they were wrong. It turns out that not only is Facebook more committed to addressing these problems, but doing so will actually hurt their bottom line. So it does suggest that maybe the problems are a little more severe than people had considered. Or conversely, maybe Facebook is finally acknowledging they have a problem and they got to do something about it.
Is Facebook still the king of social media?
For now, yes. I think Facebook is still in a very dominant position. If anything, because of Instagram and WhatsApp, in that they've diversified their holdings and they are almost a quasi-monopoly in that they no longer have to innovate themselves. They just need to be in a position to buy or co-opt any innovation that may happen in the social media sector. And further, Facebook is kind of a force of gravity in that because they have so much of our information, because they have so much, such a strong relationship with advertisers, it would be really hard for anyone to compete with them, let alone sort of slay the giant. And in that sense, as long as Facebook sort of says, hey, look, we're addressing our problems, that might be enough momentum for them to maintain that dominance.
Do you get the sense that they're willing to address their problems? Because I feel like, and this is as a lay person speaking, that we kind of hear this every cycle, that Facebook is taking a tough look at fake news and a tough look at hate speech and a tough look at declining users. And we then hear about the same concerns next time.
I think we have every reason to be skeptical, to really even be cynical as to Facebook's ability to do anything about it. But I do think that the company is finally taking it seriously. I mean, I think they've had a culture of arrogance, and that's why they've been able to constantly say they're doing something, even though no progress is being made. But I think the boss, I think Zuckerberg himself really finally understood the weight and severity and the threat to the company as a whole. So I think with his weight, with his pressure, I think the company is finally starting to do something. But I'm skeptical as to whether it's enough. I'm skeptical as to whether they really understand the problem. And I think that culture of arrogance still really colors how they see possible solutions. And that's where I think investors are right to be cautious in that Facebook sort of claimed that their operating margin would be lower for the next couple of years as they address these problems. But I wonder if a couple of years is enough. I think that this is a very long-term problem and will eat into their profitability. And I think that's one of the reasons why investors really started to take a closer look, and hence the stock price started to fall.
So there's kind of two aspects to Facebook. There is the business aspect with millions of investors and a company that's taken a huge hit in the past week. But then there's just, you know, me using Facebook to share my kids' pictures with my family. What will it take for those kind of end users to actually be impacted and to consider getting off Facebook or changing the way they use it?
I think there's a number of factors that could either keep people on the site or give them reason to leave. You know, one are these big scandals. I mean, Europe did see a decline in users, partly because there was more awareness around the privacy elements, but also because the way in which the Cambridge Analytica scandal played out in European media and European politics, I think sort of hit closer to home. And so I think that the big scandals are one factor. But on the flip side, I think, you know, earlier I sort of referred to Facebook as a force of gravity. And I think that speaks to our relationship with it, that because it has so many of our photos, so many of our family members, so many of our friends, and the only way we communicate with them is via Facebook, that creates a kind of force that is complacency. That just means we're not going to bother to change unless we have really good reason. So I think the other ingredient would be a solid competitor, would be a viable alternative. And, you know, whether that's a Google, an Amazon, a Microsoft, or just some startup that comes out of nowhere the way Facebook did, you almost need to have that in place. The sense that if you have one car, you're not going to go to a new type of vehicle. You're going to buy a car that you can trust, that performs in the same way as the one you're currently using. And I think that's an advantage for Facebook, that as long as they keep adding new features, as long as they keep stealing features from other apps, then there's no real incentive for us to try something new. But I think the privacy issue really hits home for a lot of people. And if Facebook continues to have episodes and incidences in which we learn about companies who don't break into Facebook, they're not stealing it, they're playing by Facebook's rules and still getting tons of information about us, it's those types of stories that I think increasingly give people reason to log out and, if anything, find an alternative service.
Aside from in Europe, have we seen any hard evidence that the last few years, of scandals have turned anybody off Facebook?
Generally speaking, no. I mean, there are anecdotal evidence of young people who still have Facebook accounts, but don't use it as actively as Snapchat or don't use it as actively as Instagram. Now, because Facebook owns Instagram, that's part of how they're able to hedge that type of numbers. But the other area that investors got spooked was not so much people leaving, but the fact that new people aren't joining. The idea that while Facebook has a lock on their current users, they're not able to convince the holdouts. And certainly in North America, there still are a sizable number of people who do not have Facebook accounts and have no desire for Facebook accounts. And the hope was that eventually Facebook would get them, that there'd be enough peer pressure, that there'd be enough incentive, that eventually, you know, like the phone book, Facebook would be able to get everybody. But now there's a perception that they've hit a wall, that there's only a certain amount of people who are willing to kind of play the Facebook game. And so the danger is Facebook's business model successful if you can only communicate with some of your friends?
How can a competitor reach critical mass without stealing Facebook's audience? And how do you break up a society that seems to already be pretty solidly formed?
I think the analogy here, perhaps it doesn't scale, but imagine a huge house party. Imagine a huge, you know, a concert festival where the show's over, everyone just goes home. Because that's how I think frail Facebook is, in that none of us has a contract with them. You know, even though they may have all of our photos, even though they may have lots of posts, it is possible to download them all. So it's not difficult to sort of raise stakes and pack your boxes and go elsewhere. And I think that's why Facebook has been motivated to try to change so frequently, to try to innovate as aggressively as they have, because we could all leave. We could all go. Now, I don't think that competitor would be built overnight. And that's where I think both YouTube and Twitch offer examples of competitors in waiting, in that both YouTube and Twitch really have the attention of the next generation. Now, Twitch is owned by Amazon, and of course, YouTube's owned by Google. So even though they screwed up Google Plus, they've still got YouTube, and YouTube, even though it has its own set of problems, is still going quite strong. So I don't think it's one that comes out of nowhere, but rather one that shows its capacity to manage social communities, to manage communities of hundreds of millions, if not billions of users.
Go back 10 years and tell me what you would have thought Facebook would become, and be honest about how close to the mark you would have been.
I would have seen Facebook as being almost as dominant where they are today when it comes to social media, but I did not anticipate the way in which they've conquered the news business and how a vast majority of people learn about their world via Facebook. That's definitely not something that I would have seen happening as quickly or as pervasively as it has. I mean, 10 years ago, Facebook was in its early days, but it was clearly filling a void, and it was making it easy for people to use the web. It was making it easy for people to share photos. And certainly that, you know, to me was clear as to why they would fulfill a kind of social infrastructure, that they would, you know, kind of take over email and take over the way in which we interfaced with our computers, that it became more social rather than informational.
Right, but like a better MySpace.
Yeah, exactly, right? Or a better phone book, right, in terms of a basic level of communicating. But the extent to which they dominate the news and the way in which, you know, fake news and misinformation has become such a huge threat to democracy, that is not something that I would have seen back then. And I think that's something that's caught a lot of people unprepared, hence why it's become such an issue and become such a touch point. And it speaks to how with great power comes great responsibility. And Facebook focused on the power, but not the responsibility. And hence why they're having this wake-up call, and it's costing them a lot in terms of the perceived value of them as a company.
So I have to ask you kind of the same question now to speculate on what Facebook looks like 5-10 years from now. Have you given a lot of thought to that?
I have. So the surreal answer is 10 years from now, President Zuckerberg is using Facebook as an overhaul of public services so that literally it is the government.
Oh, that sounds fun.
And yes, it's certainly not a utopia. It's not a dystopia either, because it would be incredibly mediocre and kind of banal and boring. You know, there's worse dictatorships I can think of, the present president being a great example. But nonetheless, I think an easy prediction is that Mark Zuckerberg will be president of the United States, and that Facebook as a kind of infrastructure will replace things like the census, will start, you know, engaging in financial services, will start engaging in, you know, being the tax agency. I mean, it'll, if you think about it, if Facebook has more information about the population than the government does, what's to stop it from becoming the government?
Oh, tell me I'm going to be able to vote via Facebook poll one day.
Yeah, exactly. It won't be a representative democracy. It'll be more of a direct democracy. So you will just post on your status update, oh, the traffic in my neighborhood is terrible. And the Facebook government will automatically detect that traffic in your neighborhood is a problem and will send out a road crew to go and figure out what the issue is. Or we'll use the cameras located in intersections to identify what the problem is and adjust the timing of the traffic lights accordingly. And further, Facebook, through its control of the news, will have such influence over how people vote that Facebook will be the government under President Zuckerberg.
And what's the other scenario?
Now, the more likely scenario is that Facebook will be subject to government regulation. That Facebook will be a monopoly the way that the water or the electricity is a monopoly, and it'll be part of social infrastructure run as a company but regulated quite closely as a government, because that's the only way to prevent Facebook from being the government. So there won't be so much as a competitor. Facebook will have such a huge head start that no one will be able to sort of catch up to it. And we will use Facebook as the basis by which we communicate. And because it's regulated, it'll be something that we can trust, and it'll be limited in terms of its influence, and it'll help facilitate participation in democracy and the greater society, blah, 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 blah. I would call that the middle scenario. And then the third scenario, which is more the optimistic scenario, is that Facebook fails, not because of any external threat, but because of its own incompetence, and that it's replaced by just a great range of apps that people choose from that are all interoperable.
So dispersal.
So instead of having to worry about being one or the other, it doesn't matter which one you use, and it connects with all your friends and family, and you're able to have all the same social features without one single company controlling it all.
That one sounds preferable to me, and probably for anybody who cares about their privacy.
Although, tragically, the least likely to happen. But we can hope, nonetheless.
Thank you so much, Jesse.
Thanks, Jordan.
That was The Big Story. For more, visit us at thebigstorypodcast.ca. You can also contact us there, or you can find us on social media at Big Story Podcast on Twitter, Instagram, and on future President Zuck's Big Blue Monster. Hit that like button, tell your friends, subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Our producer is Claire Brassard. Megan Coley is our social media editor. Stephanie Phillips is our research assistant. And Ryan Clark is our editing assistant. I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings, and we'll talk tomorrow.
I'm Laura Palmer, host of Island Crime. Season 6, Sweethearts, is the story of three teenage girls who were all murdered in Victoria, Canada, within about 12 months.
So she was scared. Something out there scared her.
You've just created the playground where predators can really thrive.
She was a 16-year-old girl. She was a sweetheart.
Listen to Sweethearts at frequencypodcastnetwork.com or wherever you get podcasts.
Find your frequency.